Are there any like key takeaways that you want to make sure that people get from your episode?
Oh my gosh, so many. I think education is one of the best parts about social media. It's like you can learn so much about so many different things. And I think that brands should really take that on as an opportunity to know social media really is supposed to be social. You're not gonna get more sales just because you put buy now or shop now in your caption. Sell, sell, sell. That's only gonna have the opposite effect, especially on social media. It's only gonna push people away. And really, you're not gonna be a millionaire overnight. It takes the more time you have, the better outcome you will have.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today's Real Talk is with a real leader who I am lucky to have worked with and to have become friends with, Marissa Stahl, who is the founder and CEO of Cherry Creative. So thanks so much for coming on today, Marissa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Aww. Well, so folks, I always start out by telling you how I know the guests and then we jump in. So like I said, I have been lucky to work with Marissa and her team for the past, I think about 6 months on some client work. And, you know, one thing that I really do appreciate about you, Marissa, and your team is just like I can always count on you. And I think that's so critical. The quality of your work, the way you show up as an authentic partner in servicing for clients and the way I see you handle things. So folks, this is my precursor. I'm going to give lots of shout outs to Marissa and her team. So let's actually start there, Marissa. Can you talk to people about Cherry Creative and what you guys do and just about your team?
Yeah, of course. So we are a boutique marketing agency, digital marketing agency based in LA. But with that being said, we've worked with clients kind of all over the world, like even as far as Australia. So we don't like to just stay in Southern California. but I say digital marketing, we started as a social media specific agency, but then just working with the types of clients that we tend to work with who are usually smaller or more closely aligned to the startup space or in the early stages of their company. We really saw that they needed a lot more guidance in marketing in general. So I kind of wiggled my way into doing more of their overall marketing in terms of email, paid ad strategy, or just making sure that they were really taking a full circle view at what they were doing across all of their marketing channels. So we expanded a little bit to be digital marketing as a whole, but it's mainly because I think there's often so much miscommunication between departments. And I just really saw an opportunity where we could solve some of those problems.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I really do love about working with you guys, that it's not just social media. It really is that holistic picture and how it's all coming together. And so, you know, I think that's a great point. I appreciate the way you're talking about here are some of the challenges that we'll get into a bit more later, but that, you know, that you see brands having, especially as they're starting up and trying to get things going. It is a lot of that siloed initiatives that it just does not work.
Yeah. I mean, and it happens at companies of every scale, right? Like in our situation, often it happens because the companies are small. They maybe don't they'll have one marketing person who obviously can't do everything or isn't even knowledgeable in every marketing lever as they should be. And then it happens in companies that have 5-person teams who handle each individual marketing lever. There's like miscommunication that happens, but really everything needs to be working together internally for it to have the best effect. So we kind of like to serve, I say we serve as an in-house digital marketing team, or think of us as your marketing team in-house at a company, even though we're an outside agency, because we really do want to be, like you said, to use your word, a partner with the clients that we work with.
Yeah. So one thing that you didn't talk about is the work that you do in the influencer space. So can you help people understand how you integrate that into the ecosystem that you create for your clients?
Yeah, so that's definitely a huge part of digital marketing as a whole, or definitely social media as a whole. Influencer obviously is a word that gets thrown around so often. And I think people are kind of starting to steer away from using it almost. It almost got this negative connotation for a while. But really, I like to think about it as more from the strategic partnerships lens. So who are people that you can find who maybe have an influence or an audience in their own life, whether it is a follower number, and sometimes it is closely aligned to having a large following on a social media platform, but it could also be someone who has an influence in their personal life or is just well connected with people who are in your target audience or people who you're trying to reach. So we will work with our clients to really get clear first. Everything with social and marketing starts with what your goals are. That's, the strategy will pivot depending on what an business's goals are. But once we get clear on that, we can identify, a slew of influencers or strategic partners that we think would be good to align their brand with. And that can be in a number of different ways, through gifting, through paid partnerships, through hopefully a long-standing relationship is the best option. But there's so much room and fun to play in that influencer partnership space that really is one of the best things that can move the needle for reach of a brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, so before we hop off of influence, I want to ask you a question. Like, what's your take on the whole anti-influencer? I'm air quoting for people who are listening to this as a podcast. Because I was reading so much about that for a little while, and then I haven't really heard that much about it. But what's your take on that?
I think it's tricky. I totally understand it, and I relate to it in a lot of ways because that's what I kind of mean of it influencer getting a negative connotation for a while, is that people who had really grown and built followings on social media then kind of started turning into a personal marketing channel where almost every post was sponsored. And, 5 years ago, when sponsored posts or like brands paying influencers to post on their behalf was newer, it seemed much more unique. It seemed much more fun to have a brand recommendation from someone that you followed or appreciated their content or lifestyle or were a fan of. But it's gone to a point where almost every other piece of content you'll see is sponsored. And so there has been this backlash, right, of anti-influencer where people are knowing that they're being sold to with every single thing that they see. And people don't want to be sold to. That's, always the ongoing challenge of marketing and advertising is to make it feel organic and relatable. And so I think it's good. I think having this anti-influencer movement is good because I think it also puts pressure on the individual influencers or creators to really only partner with brands that they believe in and kind of toggle that dance between, is this monetary partnership right for me? Like, are they paying me enough in order to be worth the content and recognition that I'm going to give to them? But do I also believe in this brand that I'm going to promote? So I think people have become a little bit more selective, really only in the past year. And I think it will just be better for marketing and companies overall. And I think the consumer has wised up too, of like, oh, wait, this is just another ad. Am I actually going to believe this? Like, I'm not, it'll be just one of the points of contact with a brand, but I'm also going to do my own research and see like if anyone that I know has tried it or anyone that I know has had an experience with this product.
I'm so glad you brought that point up and the fact that you said that you think it's really been in the last year, because I do think these past year, couple years, just that the consumer involvement, the consumer, like their spidey sensors are so much like higher, so much more alert that it, I do think it has forced that hand.
I think that there's a lot of consumer fatigue too, because with social media, there has been so many more direct-to-consumer brands created, which is amazing as a small business owner or an entrepreneur that you have this opportunity to launch a product or launch a business and you don't need a distributor. Like, that's an amazing thing for everyone, but also it creates so many more opportunities for brand competition, especially in like the beauty space or CPG space that we tend to do a lot of work in. And so, there you can only use one skincare cleanser a day, maybe two, but if there's 3,000 on the market, all of those brands are competing for, shelf space at your home. So it's kind of tiring to hear about 10 different new brands all the time as a consumer. You just kind of get over it or check out after a certain point.
Totally. That when you said that, it just reminded me of that craze that happened a few years ago with the yogurt aisle in the store. Obviously, that's different than like online and like you're in e-commerce, but people literally like the sales of yogurt went down because it was of that just
Yeah.
complete. There's so many options that you're just like, to your point, it's like checking out. I'm done. Like I need something else.
It's the paradox of choice, right? If you have a limited amount of choice, you'll more easily be able to make a decision than if you have too many choices. There's that famous jam experiment that they did in grocery stores. I don't know if you've heard about this, but they had like the two different displays. One display had a choice of three different jams, and one display had a choice of like 14. I'm paraphrasing. So if someone comes for me in the comments, please correct me. It's fine. I'm just pulling it out of, the deep depths of my memory. But the display who only had three choices had much higher sales rates than the one who had 14 because the consumers were just so overwhelmed with the 14 different options that they just couldn't make a choice and decided to back away.
Those are both of them are such great examples. And I think that's why, to your point earlier, when you were talking about goals from clients, like we really do have to understand what are the goals that they're coming to you for? What are they trying to do? Because we're constantly having to figure out what's a differentiating factor and how do you cut through that clutter? And again, like we every brand can't just be doing it the same way.
Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head with that. My advice is always to, once we define the goals, let's talk about what makes you unique and what is different about your brand. Especially with social media, everything can be so easy to compare. It's easy for us personally to compare ourselves to others who are putting themselves out on social media, the highlight reel that is often talked about. But it happens with brands too, of brands seeing another brand who is in their space or an adjacent space do something, and then they want to compare themselves to that, or like, oh, we should be doing that, or we could be doing this type of content, or we should copy this type of content, when you really have no knowledge about the inside going ons and happenings of what that brand is, does, what their marketing budget is, what their investments have been. So I really try to steer back my clients to, let's focus on us. Let's focus on what we're doing. Let's focus on what's making us different and really nail, double down on that.
Yeah, and I actually saw you do that in action one time working together, and I think it's just a really great, I'm kind of emphasizing this for the audience because I think so many times when we're either working at the brand or we're servicing a client, it's that like charge ahead, go, go, go. We want to do, we want to sell. And I think one of the wonderful things that I experience working with you is that step back. That pause, that lens of strategy, where, and I think that's one of the great things about having a great partner, and one that you can really rely on is because sometimes it's that person who like taps you on the shoulder. It's like, wait a second, where is
Yeah.
the basis for this? Where is the foundation? Let's go back to our compass for our brand. Because I do think it's really easy, just as much as humans compared to each other, we can get in that trap with brands comparing to each other and not realizing like that foundational difference.
Yeah, and I think, some comparison can be healthy in a certain amount of lens, or like see what other people are doing and be inspired
Of
by them.
course.
If you take it more as inspiration and less as viewing it from, oh, we're behind because we're not doing something that someone else is doing. Not doing something that someone else is doing, whether it's a type of content or a certain type of partnership or an event or something like that, it can often be a good thing. Like, great, they're doing it. Let them do it. They're doing it well. Let's do something else. And we can do what we're going to do well, and they won't be able to do it. So I think that's the hardest, one of the hardest things to communicate, especially to a brand owner or hires up at a company, of just like, let's stay in our own lane and focus on what we're doing. I promise you it's working or is going to work, but we just have to give it a little bit of time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think over time, and I'll say as my time as a marketer, where like, I went from launching social media at, a property before and those type of things, where it's like, I think brand properties have come under so much more scrutiny because like, you can literally go to your social media feed or your website or whatever it is and like just, refresh and some new content, you know? And so it's like that desire for, I think sometimes that makes people in brand seats, or you know, even if you're an agency, is like almost be too quick to change things. Sometimes we have to let something run a bit just because you can go and refresh and quickly see some new content. It's you still have to let it breathe a bit. You have to give it some time because again, like our action in social media when we're like clicking the buttons, it can go really fast, but still we need to let the consumer catch up with that. Like, what's your experience with that?
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest mistakes or misconceptions that I see with social media and have seen since I've been working in this space for 10 years, like since it began as an industry for business, and have seen so many different changes. And it takes time to build community. And if you really, social media really is supposed to be social. It's not supposed to be primarily a sales platform. That's not the purpose of it. It's supposed to be about building community. And if you do that in the right way, it can be very, very, very powerful. But you have to think about building a community, and that takes time and it takes effort and it takes small movements over a long period of time, almost like investing in the stock market. Like you're not going to be a millionaire overnight. It takes, like, the more time you have, the better outcome you will have. And I think that's the hardest thing to try to communicate is when people hire us, sometimes they want to see results immediately. Like in a month, they'll say, well, we haven't grown that much, or our sales haven't increased. I'm like, well, we just took over your platform a month ago. So maybe let's have this conversation in 6 months or a year. And if you look at brands who have done it really well, like they have taken the time to really build their community over time. And often, when a new brand enters that same space, they want to compare themselves to someone who's been in the game for 5 years. And it's like, well, they've been going at this for 5 years. We've been going at this for 5 months. Let's compare ourselves in 5 years to where they are at right now.
It's such a great point. And ironically, I was talking to my husband earlier today and I was telling him about how sometimes, like a person, a human, a worker, or a company, it's like you've been at it, you've been just grinding, hustling, doing everything you can for years. And then if you make it, air quotes, make it, whatever that means, people are like, oh, that was so quick, whatever. But like, actually, you were putting in all this work for so long. So I think it's really, I think sometimes, again, for the audience, we can understand that more almost with people and like trying to get to a certain place in your journey, your evolution. We also have to remember that for brands, like there, you have to put in time as a brand to build the brand, build a reputation, but also to your point, build equity with the community that you're building.
Yeah, and there are these outlier situations too, or like unicorn situations where a brand comes on the market and explodes. But often in those situations, what you don't see is they've had $5 million worth of investing to get started, or they have a huge partner, or they have a board that's comprised of people that have crazy connections that, you as an individual business owner wouldn't have. And if you don't do that digging to find the research of who you're comparing yourselves to, then you will be disappointed with where you're at. But you really need to find, like, the foundation of who are the other people in this space and how did they get there. It's actually, I have a background in acting in the entertainment industry. Like, I went to college for theater, and very much like I'm still involved in that space. And that's something what you were talking about earlier that comes up so often with actors or performers is they'll get on a hit show finally, and it'll be their breakout role. And it's, articles will be written of like the newcomer, Shauna Griffiths, blah, blah, blah. And like what people don't know is you've been grinding for 15 years in LA. You're like, this is not, I'm not an overnight success. This is just my first big role that people know me for.
It is so funny though, because I really do think that the speed of digital has actually like almost create some of that misperception of, because things don't change that time. You can't change things. And And as we were saying earlier, if you do change your brand and your content that much, then you just create more confusion and it's like not helping.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think that's actually one of the a big thing that we see with like traditional advertising agencies who do social. Like they really operate with the biggest corporate brands, like Orbit Gum, for example. I was looking at their social media the other day just because I was curious. And you can tell it's run by a traditional advertising agency because their content goes from campaign to campaign. So whenever they've created a commercial or like a big pop moment for the brand, they'll create a couple, export a couple other assets for social media, but there really is no ongoing brand communication or ongoing storytelling or community building, excuse me. And that's really what is needed in social is a constant conversation with your fans and followers. And then on top of that, you'll have the pops of your campaign moments. But in the valleys in between those times, like, what are you doing? What are you saying? How are you adding value to your community? How are you making their lives better or improving that relationship as time goes on? And that's really where a lot of brands miss the mark.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. So, do you have some examples of any of the brands that you think are doing that really well, that combination of the always on and the campaign integrations?
A couple that come to mind is like I'm kind of my mind goes immediately to some Gen Z brands, like Jerf Avenue, Matilda Jerf, which is a fashion brand. She's based out of the Netherlands and or I think Amsterdam. Yeah, the Netherlands. And just very cool girl, but kind of always giving that style inspiration, or like Chamberlain Coffee, always giving some creative, cool thing for their community to respond to. Summer Fridays is an amazing beauty brand who does this really well. They're always doing product education every single day. And then when they have a new launch, it'll become about that, or they'll do an event and it will become about that. And really always good at highlighting their community, using a lot of UGC, doing a lot of gifting as well to make sure that they're getting a wide diversity of content, but always on product education all the time.
That's another thing you and I have talked about a lot is that need for that education. And there's so many brands out there that almost skip that point. They just want to talk about their brand and their product. But again, it's like you might have to create education in the category related to your specific product. And like you that is so critical to spend that time doing that.
Yeah, I think education is one of the best parts about social media. It's like you can learn so much about so many different things. And I think that brands should really take that on as an opportunity to provide value. So you're exactly right. Like it could be a category where people don't even know anything about this category and need to be educated of why they even need whatever solution your product is giving. Or just going back to what makes you different, like with Summer Fridays, for that example. The ingredients that, you know, make their products different, the production process, the packaging, like they'll talk about all of those different things on an ongoing basis so that you really know as a consumer and become a champion of why you're even buying this brand to your friends in your life of, you know, well, I'm buying this because it has this XYZ ingredient that makes my skin X, Y, and Z. And like you've almost been brainwashed in a way to become an ambassador just by keeping up with what they're doing.
It makes a ton of sense. I mean, that's a part of the importance of like having those talking points and hitting them, through your channels is you're right. You do almost like train your audience.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing thing and it's repetitive, right? Like marketing is a lot of repetition and saying the same thing in a similar way, but a little bit different over and over again. But it's because your consumer doesn't know your brand inside and out like you do, and they don't know your products inside and out like you do. So you kind of constantly need to have that underlying messaging.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to slightly switch, but it's actually going back to goals because I want to, first of all, like when you're working with your clients, do you find that they typically know what goals they're trying to reach, or do you find yourself needing to almost like supplement or coach them in the goals?
Usually the latter, because of course everyone really wants social media because they want to make more money. Like that's why we're all here, right? It's business. They want to increase their sales. They want to build their community so that they can increase their sales. I know that that's like the real answer based on whatever, even, depending on whatever answer they give me. But along the way is really where the coaching comes into place. It's not necessarily at the beginning. It's us really steering them towards making decisions or doing different campaigns or having a budget for different partnerships in order to achieve the goal of more sales. Like, it's not, you're not going to get more sales just because you put buy now or shop now in your caption. It's kind of a funnel or a trickle down of all these different things that you need to do in order to establish that consumer trust first and then guide them towards making that buying decision. A lot of times people get impatient and they want, like, this should be sales driven. This should be sales driven. We need shop now. We need shop now. Sell, sell, sell. That's only going to have the opposite effect, especially on social media. It's only going to push people away. And really, we have to have a lot of stern conversations of, okay, I totally know you want sales. We also need to talk about this product and do that product education piece so that people know why they need it before we tell them, you need it, you need it, you need it, and shove it down their throat.
And I think there's a lot of people who are listening who are in some sort of a seat of leadership in this space. And so we all have to answer to someone else, right? It's like the CFO or whomever, the founder who's like, I want these sales. And so I think part of this, I'm pausing to again, like kind of put an exclamation on this, which is that one way that I found to try to handle that is to start to educate even internally to those people that you're answering to about the almost like the ladder of goals that get to the sales. And that, again, to your point, it's these almost like pulse points. It's this funnel of getting there, but you have to reach these metrics first almost. And they're not set metrics. Every brand is different, but things like do matter. People, to your point, you don't launch an Instagram feed and, sell everything tomorrow.
Yeah. And I think with being in the social media industry, digital marketing industry, there's so much education that has to go on internally with the people that I'm working with. Because often the people who are paying our retainer is someone who is not a digital native, is probably, 10, 15, maybe even 20 years older, who maybe has an Instagram to keep up with their friends, kind of, or their kids, but doesn't really understand the nuance of strategy that goes into it. And so much of it is educating the people that we're working with of why what we're doing is important, why what we're doing takes time, and why they should give it the time to actually work and grow, which sometimes we're successful at and sometimes not. But I've had so many conversations over the past 10 years, just almost begging a lot of times, like, please just give us the time to really let this build, and you will see, the fruits of our labor, but it will just take a little bit. It's not going to be an overnight success.
And for people who are listening who actually have a resource, like an agency that's working similar to, as Marissa is talking about Cherry Creative, remember that that person can actually like help you in spelling that out for people that you're reporting into. Because I think, and I'm curious what you think about this, Marissa, is a lot of times you get this like overarching simplification. Social media, that word, social media could mean a lot of different things, but at the same time, social media does not mean and PR and blog and influencers. Those are all different disciplines that work together. They all have different metrics. They all have different roles in leading to that the sales. So again, like I'm just pausing for the audience is like, remember that if you're working with Marissa or someone like that, you can say, hey, this is the challenge I'm facing internally. Help me to like educate, help me to explain it different because it just isn't that simple.
Yes, you're so right. And even in social media in that bucket, just separate from PR and influencer, I kind of fold in influencer to social media, but that's just because that's what we do. But even within social media, it's the difference of content creation, copywriting, like graphic design, like all of that is also under the social media bucket, which can be its own discipline as well. Some companies who have a social media team will have a social media copywriter who only does the copy. They'll have video editors who are editing video or creative for social media only. They'll have, you know, photographers or other content creators. Then they'll have strategists who are over leading everything and putting it all together and like working with that team to create those specific pieces of content. So that's a big thing with smaller brands, is they'll want to pay someone. I had a brand who reached out to me and wanted us to do Instagram and TikTok posting every day on the feed and stories for $1,000 a month. And that's someone who, you know, we're not only coming up with the strategy, we're doing all the content creation, all the editing, all the copywriting, all the calendar planning, community management, platform management. That is a full-time job. And with hiring an agency, the benefit of an agency is you can get multiple people working on your brand for a cheaper rate. Like, you'll have my team. So it's that social media team that I was just talking about, like the copywriters, the graphic designer, the video editors, probably for the price of one person, but it still is like the salary of a full-time person, but you're getting more people. I feel like I got a little bit off track. That.
$1,000.
I laughed too, Shauna. I laughed too.
Literally laugh, because I'm just like, when I hear, I had a brand recently, they're like trying to I'm just going to hire one, like, air quotes, cost effective person. So, AKA in their mind, was a junior person who can do all of the things that an agency would do. And it's like, it's just laughable. And again, I think it's because people, consumers, we can all create an Instagram feed. We can all create whatever the platform is. And we almost fool ourselves into thinking we know how to do this. And it's just very different. So I just encourage everyone, if you don't know this space as much as either, you know, Marissa obviously is an expert or me, it's like, really make sure that you don't make the mistake of oversimplifying it. And I'm not saying it's the most difficult thing in the world. It's brain surgery, but at the same time, it deserves the respect and the understanding of the nuance. You used a great word earlier, the nuance of the space. So, you know, it's also a space that's just constantly changing. And we talked earlier about like getting inundated by brands, but it's also inundated by information about it. And I mean, I was reading something the other day that was talking about one of the new metrics that people are really emphasizing is the time that people are watching the videos.
Yeah,
and so
huge.
Like, you are in it, you're living it every day. Like, how do you and your team keep up with all the information?
I think just by being in it and living in it every day, and then staying up to date on, you know, with blogs about the industry, or I'm like really big into marketing Twitter, social media, Twitter, just keeping up with other experts who are in my space. And I think the thing is like all those roles that we mentioned before, like a social media expert will be able to do all of those. Like, I can edit video, I can shoot content, I can be a photographer when I need to be, I am a copywriter, but you also need to know that all of that costs money. Like, you're not going to get the expert level for $1,000 a month, but keeping up with the ever-changing landscape, it can be exhausting for sure. Like, I remember so vividly when Instagram stories became a thing, of, you know, them stealing that idea from Snapchat. And that has completely changed the way that Instagram works. And then obviously with TikTok, and now the mention of Reels, that really changed the landscape for social media as well. And now, you know, Instagram went really hard. Like, last year was all about Reels on Instagram. They pulled back from that a little bit because they had a lot of backlash of that platform being reclassified to a video sharing platform from a photo sharing platform. The users didn't really like that because it wasn't the original intention of the platform. So they've gone back a little bit more towards imagery. But TikTok, the length of people watching videos is a big thing, of people watching their videos, see when people start to drop off, re-editing those videos to try to keep the hook for longer. And that is video editing takes things to a completely new level, because it's one thing to have a beautiful stylized photo shoot. It's another to be a video editor that hooks someone in the first 3 seconds, continues to hook them every 10 seconds, all the way to the end of the 3 minute video. It's a very, very hard skill to master.
Totally. I'm laughing because I'm thinking about those moments when you're like watching a video and you're like, but you get through the whole thing and you're like, why did I even just watch that?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, like, because it's changing all the time, I think that can be really freeing, you know, and yeah. if you reframe the way you look at it, a lot of people can be very intimidated because there is this constant thing that you have to keep up with. You have to be churning out content left and right 24/7, which is true. But because of that, it's so low risk. Like, yeah. It is not rocket science. It's supposed to be fun. Try something, like throw up a video, try something new. You know, we do want to have produced assets that are really well reflective of the brand, but we can also do something fun and crazy and just try something. And if it flops, it flops. You're going to be posting something else tomorrow. That's fine. move on. Like, it doesn't have to be so precious. We can just have a little bit more fun with it.
Yeah. I actually watched a video on, it must've been TikTok the other day. And this woman was actually talking about, I can't think of her name right now, but she actually gives advice for people on photography, like, you know, just for us civilians to take good photos. But she made a really good point, was that like your older people, your millennials and up, photos, like when I was growing up, it was a lot to take a photo. Like if you were going to get it, you know, you had to get the, take the picture, you couldn't actually see it. So you have no idea if it was good or not. Then you could, like, get it developed. It was kind of expensive. It took some time, all of that. So she was just saying how the newer, younger generations have more of that mindset of, I can just take it and redo it and I can see it and have more fun with it. And so I only paused to share that because, again, for listeners, I think it's a great thing to, if you're someone who is older like me, where you're like, I've had some of that as a barrier to taking photos. And so I've had to get over that. But it was like this aha moment when she said that. I was like, oh gosh, I don't want to get stuck in that old mindset that I didn't even realize I had.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Really interesting. That's funny. Like, thinking about if you get asked to take a group photo of someone, if it's an older group, you'll only take one. Or if you ask an older person to take your photo, they will take one a lot of times. And then if you ask someone who's younger, like, you know, a millennial or Gen Z, someone asks me to take their photo on the street, I will take 30. I'm like, I'll get different angles. I'm like, maybe you should try this. Or if you get someone even younger who is Gen Z, they'll take like 100. They'll be like laying on the ground. They'll be doing different angles, doing different things because they're not being precious about it. I think that's such a good point. I've never framed it in that way, but I love that. I definitely will continue to think about that.
It was really interesting. God, I was like, oh God, I'm dating myself by that mindset. So I know. Gotta get my shit together. We don't have too much more time, and I just thank you so much for your time. So I want to make sure that we hit on your career evolution, which I think is, you know, you have managed to, you were talking earlier about being in the acting space and you had different roles and you've managed to break into Hollywood, which is like one of the hardest spaces, I think, and really be like taking it by storm with your business. So I would love for you to share a bit with, like, maybe what sparked you to want to create your own agency. And because I think some of it's been through this, the last 3 years, the pandemic on time period is really hard. So can you share a bit about that with, like, what's that been like and you know, anything?
For sure. I mean, my background is interesting because I didn't ever intend to get into marketing. It just kind of happened. So I mentioned earlier, I majored in theater acting at USC and very much wanted to be a performer. I definitely still classify myself as a performer even now. And I did kind of pursue that career full time for 2 years after college and had all the traditional side hustle jobs of working at a restaurant, working at I was a personal assistant. I worked at a juice company. I did it. I was a nanny. I was almost a Lyft driver. I was like right when Lyft started. And it just got to a point where I knew that all of those jobs were so hard. And if you have an artist in your life, you will know about this pursuit. But that journey is one of the toughest things that anyone can ever do. You're constantly talked down to, you're constantly grinding, you're constantly being told no, you're trying to make your life work with $0. And especially living in LA was not the easiest thing to do. And my self-esteem really took a hit. I got to a point where I was like, I'm not going to be able to continue this pursuit unless I find something more stable that also uses my brain in a way that I feel like I'm not just wasting away working at a restaurant. And that's not to demean anyone who does those jobs. I am so grateful for that time because I have so much respect for those people. It's the hardest job you will ever have. Yeah. And so a friend of mine at that time had started a social media agency very at the beginning of the industry. And I kind of ran into her at a workout class and we got to talking. I had kind of been dabbling in doing a little bit of freelance social media. I was like running an accounting firm's Facebook and LinkedIn and got to talking with her. She was hiring, ended up working with her part-time. Within 6 months, I was full-time, and she was very lenient for the 5 years that I worked with her of all of my entertainment pursuits. So anytime I had an audition or wanted to, booked a commercial or something like that, I was no questions asked. I was able to skip work and go out and do that, which really gave me the opportunity to continue that pursuit, but also build this career on the side. And then that kind of relationship journey came to a natural end. I decided it was time to move on and try something new at the end of 2019. So December 2019, I left that agency and wasn't quite sure what my next step was going to be. I was like, I'll just figure it out. I'll freelance doing social media for a little while and then figure out where my path will go. And then at that same time, I had a bunch of amazing referrals come in for great, great clients and just kind of took it as a lesson or sign from the universe of, I guess I'm still meant to be in this industry for a little bit longer, and started my own agency and kind of have been on that ride since.
That's awesome. I mean, talk about like kind of circle back to what we were saying in the beginning. It's like that time you put in, that grit you put in, that commitment, and to really give it that time to learn and grow and pay off. And so it's so great to see. And so wait, I actually want to know. I've been wondering this, I've never asked. Tell me the story behind the name.
Oh, the name. My middle name is Cherry.
Oh,
So th that's where
that's
Cherry Creative
so
comes from.
cool.
Yeah, so Cherry was my great great grandmother's last name, so I'm named after Caroline Matilda Cherry. So it's a family name and my middle name, and I have a lot of different little cherry motifs in my life. People always buy me little cherry things. So if you see me in real
Oh,
life, I
I love
definitely will have at least one thing that has cherries on it. But yeah, I
Oh.
always have to say that it's a family name. It's not like my parents were obsessed with fruit or anything like that.
It's such a great story. I had no idea. And I love that also because it's like it means something to you that you put it into the name of the business. It just is, again, like a testament, like you really do put your whole self into it when you're making a business like
Yeah.
you have. Yeah,
Yeah, and
that's
I didn't
amazing.
want to name it like Marissa Stahl something. So it still is my name, but you wouldn't really know that it's my name unless you know me more personally.
Well, now I know. I don't know
Now
I
you
why
know.
I never asked, but I was always kind of curious. So in this journey, I'm curious, was there a certain point where you started to see yourself differently, like as a leader? Because I think what you've described today, what you've shown today, what I've seen all along is you have such an authentic way of showing up and leading and being transparent. And I really appreciate it as, again, like in partnership with you. I think it's great for other people, for the audience to see and hear. So I'm curious again, is that like, was there a point when you were like, oh, I see myself differently as a leader in business?
Well, thank you for saying that, first of all. And I think there has been a few different points in my life where I've noticed a shift. One, I would say I think I'm naturally that way. I'm naturally someone who likes to stand up and lead or, ran for different offices and clubs and things like that ever since high school. I just am someone who likes to be involved. I have friends who don't, who that's not their thing. That's just something that I enjoy. But kind of also through that same time of what I was talking about, that 2 year period when I was pursuing acting full time, I got really involved in my alumni association at USC as a way of like, I had just graduated and it was a way to get back and kind of stay connected to this university that was really grounding for me in California. I'm from Florida, so USC really became kind of my home in California. And after I graduated, was a little bit, standing on shaky ground, wasn't sure where to go. So that was my impetus in getting reconnected with the Alumni Association. And through that, I've been involved in multiple different boards and leadership opportunities in the past 7 or 8 years of my involvement there. But I have seen so much growth in my leadership skills through that experience. And I think it was really this amazing thing that helped rebuild my confidence after that tumultuous 2 year period after graduating college, where I was in these rooms with people who were much older than me, 30, 40, 50 years older, who would listen to things that I had to say, who were welcoming for me to voice my opinion and really respected my opinion or thoughts and ideas. And that really gave me a lot of confidence of what I have to say is worthwhile and can move the needle on these different conversations or different areas. And I've continued to be involved in the Alumni Association since. Actually, I'm kind of coming to my end right now in one way, like my term for the Board of Governors that I'm on right now is ending this month, but I'm sure I'll continue to be involved in some other way. But I have really noticed my leadership skills evolve through that.
Yeah, I love to hear that because I think sometimes people think it's, you might have a natural energy to be that way, but it's really nice to see, like, no, you actually, when you put yourselves in those situations that were probably hard or challenging in the beginning, that was actually an experience that catapulted your evolution as a leader.
Yeah, and I think a really good part of being a good leader is also being a good mentor. And I had some amazing mentors who make you feel seen and heard. And I think building a confidence, a natural confidence as a leader is really important, or else it can come across as arrogance or kind of overcorrecting and cocky, which, often we find too. But that's like an overcorrection. Often someone who maybe isn't the most confident but is still trying to be a leader shows up in that way. So I'm very grateful to all the people who gave me that space to step up and kind of trusted me that whatever I was going to bring to the table was going to be worthwhile and kind of gave me that room to grow. And I also think it's kind of now my responsibility to provide that opportunity to someone else or continue to do that in the future.
That's awesome. And like I said, I mean, I when I introduce you, I really do. Your authenticity as a leader really shines. And thank you for coming here today. And for,
My
I'm
gosh.
hopefully we'll continue to do work on clients together. So before I let you go, I always end everybody's episodes because we cover so many different topics in our time together. Are there any like key takeaways, again, knowing that what we're trying to do here was a lot of like help people solve pain points, know how you work, things that you're seeing in the industry. Are there any like key takeaways that you want to make sure that people get from your episode?
Oh my gosh, so many. Well, I would say my number one soapbox that I'm constantly shouting from the rooftops is that social media and social media strategy is so much more complex than you think. And listen to your social media marketers, they're here to steer you in the right direction. And if you have a small budget, go to them with, my budget is $5,000 a month. What can we do to make it the most effective for that. And if they're a good strategist and a good marketer, they'll be able to give you a strategy that, you know, can move the needle in smaller ways with that budget, you know. And I think it's so worthwhile, but having a good strategy is really the most fundamental necessity for making it impactful, just like you would for a business plan. Like, you need to have a strategic business plan if you want your business to grow. It's the same for social media. And also, it's going to cost you more than $1,000 a month. Is my other soapbox thing that I would stand on.
Yeah, I second that. And as you all heard, we both laughed at the $1,000 that somebody said to her earlier. So, no, I think the world of you and the work that you do, and you as a person. So thank you so much for coming on today and sharing all that you did with me and the audience.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, I definitely can't wait to work with you in the future and going forward and stay connected.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.